This episode is brought to you by Sterling Soap Company. Fellas, you've heard the phrase, look good, feel good, right? But why not add smell good to that too? That's where Sterling Soap Company comes in. First, Sterling Soap is 100% natural and has a wide variety of bath soaps, shave soaps, beard balm, lotions, and cologne. Second, there's a scent just for you. How about burgundy? Yeah, it's more than a color. The Sterling Soap folks blend natural essential oils with hints of mahogany, golden amber, and sandalwood. Or how about D503, an intensely masculine scent inspired by Legend by Mont Blanc. And third, you will feel good about the price. For just a little more than you'd pay at the grocery store, Sterling Soap will leave you feeling clean, refreshed, and ready for whatever's next. Give Sterling Soap a try today. Visit sterlingsoap.com. This day in sports history. It's May 12th, and on this day in 2000, NASCAR's first family of racing suffered a horrific tragedy. Adam Petty was the fourth-generation driver from a family that had been racing cars since the beginning of stock car racing. They were a family with motor oil coursing through their veins and lead in their right foot. Getting around a track as fast as you could was always their pursuit. It started with Lee Petty racing on the beaches of Daytona and the dirt tracks up and down the eastern seaboard. The flame was passed to his son Richard after Lee's horrific crash with Johnny Beecham in 1961. Richard became the king, winning exactly 200 races until he retired in 1992. But of course, he had his share of horrific crashes, some of which we've talked about here. Richard passed the torch then to Kyle, who had less success on the track with just 8 wins, and then there was Adam, a bright light of a kid, always smiling, the next in line to carry the Petty Enterprise banner. Until this day in 2000. The NASCAR circuit was in Loudoun, New Hampshire. Adam was driving in a practice session for the Busch Series race. The Busch Series was the second tier at that point. It's called the Xfinity Series now. And heading down the backstretch, Petty's throttle stuck, and he had no way of unsticking it. He drove full speed into the Turn 3 wall at an estimated speed of 130 miles per hour. He died instantly with a basilar skull fracture. It was the first of 4 that would happen in the next 11 months. Just 2 months later at Loudoun, driver Kenny Irwin would be killed in a practice crash that was the result of a stuck throttle. And again, it would happen in Turn 3. A lot of blame was heaped on the track due to its long straightaways and unbanked turns, but the real problem was with the cars themselves. Stuck throttles with no chance to cut the power were the issue. Dennis Setzer had the same issue in his Craftsman truck ride later that weekend. Bobby Labonte, who would win his only NASCAR championship in the 2000 season, had a stuck throttle during a practice run at Darlington in preparation for the Southern 500. Both Setzer and Labonte survived their incidents. NASCAR eventually mandated a kill switch in August of 2000. Adam Petty was just 19 when he died in his race car. But in that short time, he brought joy to a lot of people. He visited sick kids in the hospital. Inspired by a camp in Florida he visited as a kid, Adam was in the planning stage for a camp for kids in Randleman, North Carolina. And after his death, Richard and Linda Petty donated land, and Kyle and Patty Petty developed the camp that Adam dreamed about. The NASCAR-themed Victory Junction Gang Camp opened in 2004 as a place where children with serious illness would be able to experience the joys of childhood and forget about being sick for a while. That's Adam's lasting legacy after his life was cut short on this day in 2000. Also on this day in 1970, Mr. Cub Ernie Banks hit career home run number 500. Banks blasted a 1-1 offering from Atlanta pitcher Pat Jarvis into the bleacher seats, which were mostly empty that day. At the time, the 39-year-old Banks was the 9th major leaguer to hit 500 homers. This was Banks' final season in the majors, and he hit another 12 dingers that year to finish with 512 career home runs. In 1979, Chris Evert lost in the semifinals of the Italian Open in a third-set tiebreak to Tracy Austin. Now, this was a huge loss because the Italian Open is played on clay, and Evert was the master on the surface. Austin's win on this day ended Chris Evert's streak of 125 consecutive wins on clay that started back in 1973. During that span, she only dropped 8 sets. Her 125 consecutive wins is the most of any other woman or man in the history of professional tennis. By comparison, Rafael Nadal's longest win streak on clay is 81 matches, and Nadal is considered the men's greatest on the surface. Interestingly, after losing this match to Austin, Everett went back out and won the next 72 matches she played on clay. In 1997, Kobe Bryant had a game, well, he wanted to forget, and quickly. It was Game 5 of the Western Conference Semifinals, with Kobe's Lakers hoping to stay alive against the Utah Jazz, who led the series 3-1. This is Kobe's rookie year, and really this is more Shaq's Lakers, not Kobe's quite yet, but he was anxious to make his mark in the postseason, just like the guy he was pursuing, Michael Jordan. With time winding down in regulation and the game tied at 89, the 18-year-old Kobe put up a shot to win it, and shot an air ball. So the game was headed to overtime. Early in the OT, Shaq fouled out, and it seemed like Bryant was the only one willing to step up and take the shots. But Kobe kept missing. And not just missing shots, missing the rim. In the overtime, he shot another 4 air balls, including 2 in the final 45 seconds that would have tied the game and sent it to a second overtime. The loss closed out the Lakers' season, but to Kobe's credit, he did not let the failure in crunch time of this game define him. In fact, there's a good chance he used this game to fuel his desire to be better. Before his career ended in 2016, Kobe had 5 championship rings and was considered one of the best to take the big shot to win in the NBA. And in 2012, golfer Ryan Gibson, then a 26-year-old professional golfer from Australia, got around the River Oaks Golf Club in Edmond, Oklahoma in 55 strokes. So this is not tournament golf, not a PGA event or a mini tour event or anything like that. It was a Saturday morning round with friends, but this was also not a putt-putt course. River Oaks was a full-length 6,700-yard par 71 golf course. Gibson made 12 birdies and 2 eagles on his way to a 16-under round. It is the lowest recorded score, outside of North Korea, ever shot on a full-length golf course, and is in the Guinness Book of World Records. And time now for the non-sports Did You Know? Well, this one sort of breaks the rules of non-sports, but in Montana, it is illegal to play disc golf anywhere but on a disc golf course. That's all for today. I'll have more tomorrow on This Day in Sports History. This has been an original Thrive Suite production.
Hey there, Sports History fans.
We've got some exciting news to share with you. 6 of our podcasts from the Sports History Network have made it to the final round of voting for the prestigious Sports Podcast Awards. Here are their shows and the categories. Historically Speaking Sports and This Day in Sports History are both competing for Best Sports Talk Podcast. No Nonsense Old School Weightlifting History is in the running for Best Fitness, Health, and Well-Being Podcast. When Football Was Football is up for Best Sports Documentary Podcast. Wrestling with Heels On has entered the ring for Best Wrestling Podcast. And Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing is fighting for the title for Best Combat Sports Podcast. Now, of course, we need your help to take home the championship for each of these awesome shows. All you gotta do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/vote, cast your vote for your favorite shows, or better yet, all 6 of them. Again, every vote counts, and we gotta show the world how much sports history really matters. So thank you for your support and making Sports History Network the headquarters for sports yesteryear. But again, don't wait. You gotta go vote now. That's over at sportshistorynetwork.com/vote.